You're listening to Singularity, Episode 14, A Course in Miracles, Part 6 of Chapter 2. Welcome, Miracle Makers. I am Angie, your host of Singularity, a podcast where we are not afraid to ask the questions that lead us to our truth. Each season, we'll be discussing our way through a different sacred or inspired text. Join us with Season 1 as we find our truths in A Course in Miracles, the advent or beginning of a great awakening. And just like the Course itself will tell you, this is but one version of the universal curriculum. There are many others, this one only differing in form. They all lead to God in the end. So go ahead and grab your coffee, have your pen and paper handy, and follow along in the text if you have it. Don't forget a free version is available at acourseinmiraclesnow.com. Here we go. Hello, Miracle Makers. Thank you for joining me today. This is episode 14. And today we're going to cover part 6 of chapter 2, Fear and Conflict. I am very excited about this episode. I feel like this section really ties together so much of the truths that we've been discussing so far, and at the same time, presenting a new view for us to move forward with. So let's get started. There is such a theory in sociology known as the conflict theory. It was formed by Karl Marx. While reading through this section of the Course, I was so excited when I saw how well this theory fit with the message of the Course. I've arranged the definition a little as it applies to the Course. It goes like this. Our potential, usefulness, or abilities are being misused and focused toward a perpetual conflict due to the presence of fear feeding the idea of needs or lack. So now the sonship holds that order is kept because of their ability to exercise control, rather than by uniting and complying with the laws, rules, and standards within a natural balance set in place by God's will. So with the conflict theory applied to the Course, it's saying we misuse our creative ability. We believe intentional actions gets the job done and not intentional thought. Feeding the lie of fear, we believe we have to take matters into our own hands for them to happen. We use all of our creative ability doing things from the body instead of from our mind. Reversing the automatic natural order that ensures our needs are met. This is what Ephesians 2 is trying to say in verse 8 and 9. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast. Grace is the ease of God, the effortlessness of being in the presence of God or love, because we are that. Saving us simply through faith or belief or knowing this, and not of ourselves, means there isn't any actions or works that we have to do to save ourselves. I want to point out too that this statement isn't saying that we aren't worthy to save ourselves. It's saying this is a gift, so any actions or works are not even necessary. There isn't something we have to do or earn or achieve it. Lest any man should boast is the same as saying, since it's a gift for everyone, no one can brag about it. It can't become a trophy won by someone because of something they've done more than another. If it was done this way, this would only cause competition and ego. On to paragraph 2. Fear is self-controlled. Fear is our creation, not God's, and God isn't coming in and saving us from the fears that we're having because, one, fear is an illusion, so there really isn't anything for God to come in and save us from. And two, we choose to use our free will to create fear, making it a possible experience. Fear can only be controlled and created within the levels it was thought possible. And fear was thought possible in our minds. God cannot unchoose for us. It's on us if fear prevents love from showing up in our awareness, because really, it's there. It's always there. But we choose to see fear instead. In God's design, we aren't meant to worry about constructive acts. Right away, the Course wants us to know this. The design ensures these constructive actions fall into place by God's control or will automatically, requiring no action on our part. Designed under God's control frees us up to create from our mind with intentional thought. Using our bodies as an example, we don't have to spend every second telling our body to breathe or our hearts to beat or our eyes to blink. These things, they happen automatically. We can focus our attention and make ourselves breathe or blink on purpose, but we don't have to waste our time doing this. The same with the universe, as the sun rises and sets, or the earth rotates. It's all going to happen automatically. No action is required from us. Now, I'll be honest, I wasn't exactly sure what constructive acts were, so I looked up the definition. In the definition, it not only gave me a clear understanding of what it is, I also realized the huge connection that these acts have to God's will. Here is the definition as I've applied it to the course. Constructive acts completely or totally indicate one's agreement to acknowledge an order with no worry toward the outcome because it is dictated by an existing framework, a set of rules or procedural steps established through an earlier event or action regarded as a guide to be considered in subsequent similar circumstances. Now, I know that was a lot of words, and I have a few of these definitions in this episode. I know they are wordy, but if you really listen to them, they may help all of this connect as truth for you too. In paragraph one, it's saying this is supposed to work where we create with intentional thought under God's guidance and let God's design or control then take over from there. His control then ensures that all the actions that are needed for that creation process to take place, they will unfold on their own. Paragraph three, what we do comes from what we think. This is a simple way to say how constructive acts work with God's will. When we communicate and create from spirit, our thoughts or designs are sent into the physical world as a command. Built into the creation process, then, any and all action required is programmed to fall into place automatically. Now, I say programmed only because I want to convey that this is consistent and constant. Unlike the mind, the body can't decide if it will or won't. It has to. As our creation, the body must ultimately follow the desires of its creator. And as creators, we are to think it, knowing the established framework of God's creation plan will pick up automatically. But here's where it all gets twisted in our head. We think we have no control of our thoughts, but this is the one place we have control. Instead, we think that we have control over our actions, and we think that our actions control our thoughts. We think, well, if I do this, my mind will eventually catch up. When really all actions are under the laws of God's design, the physical world is built by thought and subject to the desires of the mind. Because I did this action and this happened, actions appear to make the change. However, actions only perform a function. They can't make real change. Real change is done by the mind. The action is a result of the thinking. How this is all possible? Well, it's God's creation plan, which goes like this. We think it, we believe it, we create it. It is the process of creation which has a deterministic algorithm or a set of rules set into place that develop the thought into being. Paragraph 4, change your mind, change the behavior. Here we're continuing this thought. Actions are just expressions of thought. Change the thought and then you change the outcome. Changes are made within the process of making, not after it's already made. So the mind level is where we make real changes. It's where lasting change comes from. If you ask any fitness guru, they're going to tell you that real change happens when we set our mind to our desired outcome. The actions will follow as a result of shifting the mindset. This is the same thinking we use when making any life changes, like diet or bad relationships, for example. We build belief with thought, and belief is either love or not, and then belief becomes behavior. We can change our actions all we want, but the mind is where we need to focus on change. The body can do things that result in change, yes. Remembering, though, in order for it to do those things, it needed the thought first. The body doesn't think on its own. Each and every action originates from our belief. Something to be aware of is so much of the time, we don't realize we have hidden beliefs. Beliefs of lack of worth due to guilt lurking within us. We may want health and happiness, but if on some level we carry guilt and believe ourselves unworthy, that belief will override our want every time. The mindset we choose gets our creative power. A choice involves selecting one of two or more options, but the only choice is love. Love is all there is. The other option is simply not choosing. And fear is the result of not choosing love. Unwillingness to choose love is like packing up our creative focus, removing it from our mind, and then moving and unpacking it into the body. We feel independent. The ego mind fills in, and it feels good to stretch out in our new home. We're free from the rules and responsibilities that we had in our mind. But this is like when a child runs away from home, moving into the treehouse out back. At first, they feel empowered and free, but as more time goes by and the light of day fades, They become very aware of their choice. Ego makes it difficult for them to just up and abandon this idea of independence. Heading back inside the house doesn't seem like an option yet. They're either too embarrassed, stubborn, or afraid of their parents' reaction. Soon it's cold and quiet. The only sounds are their stomach growls from hunger pains. And as the loneliness sets in, so does the fear, and they begin to miss home, remembering the feeling of the warmth and safety in their bed, having dinner waiting for them, and just knowing they will be taken care of. All the while, the parents are watching over them through the kitchen window, knowing eventually they'll figure it out and they'll come back inside. Paragraph 5. We correct fear by making up our minds. When we can't make up our minds, this causes strain. It's very frustrating when we aren't getting the outcome we want, especially when we want it so bad. And if we want it this bad, why aren't we getting it? The text tells us the two reasons this causes a strain is one, because we say we want something, but really what we want is something completely opposite more. We want to lose weight, for example, or stop smoking. But really what we want are some fries or a cigarette. The key to fix this is realizing whatever the mind wants more will be the outcome. So losing weight will happen when we want to lose weight more than the piece of pie. We'll stop smoking when the thought of being at the beck and call of the next cigarette becomes more of a desire than the satisfaction of smoking one. Another way we feel strain is when we behave as we think we should, even if it's not what we want to do. These moments, they build resentment because we are not honoring our true desires. Even if we're doing the choosing, if we feel forced or pushed in any way, we will on some level become angry. Anger is a sign that our mind and behavior aren't on the same page. This comes about when we're doing something we really don't want to do. And anger experienced in balance isn't necessarily a bad thing. It is meant to be an emotional gauge leading us back to our center. A love-based mindset isn't necessarily perfection. It's important to know this on some level, because it will help us as we continue to discover our truths as we learn about death and heaven as we go through the course. Final peace isn't when everyone finally gets their fair share of everything they want. This type of fairness is static. It leaves no room for movement. Currently within the movement of the creation process, we experience fairness as balance. This universal give and take where someone who temporarily has more gives to someone who temporarily has less, each of us rotating in and out of both. Balance is needed for the movement of love. In whatever way that comes, this balance is the breath that is life. So this even means that we could experience balance as having something taken away from us. It may seem like love is missing in those moments, but remember, love is balancing, not perfection. It ultimately induces peace, and peace is the unified goal and design of God's creation. Now it's just about finding out how to change our own minds to align our beliefs with the love and peace of God's will and plan to establish our balance. Paragraph 6, accepting the unified goal. When we are willing to accept our truth, we will be able to be in a state of mind where we are in balance with our unified goal. When we are willing to accept our truth, we will be able to be in a state where our minds are in balance with the unified goal. This requires a willingness, though, on our part to walk away from the only reality that we've ever known and embrace our true reality. Of course, our true reality is experiencing love how God intended within this expansion. The unified goal was a shared message from Jesus of the Course and of the Bible and many other spiritual masters, teaching us to conquer fear, remember love, and then live and create with joy. I think this part of the text opens up an opportunity for us to go over a few concepts that will help our understanding of things that we've talked about so far and will continue to talk about as we go. I want to share these concepts and some terminology clarification. They again are a bit wordy, but I hope what I'm trying to convey comes through. For me, I relate more to the idea of God as energy. It just takes the dogma away from me and I'm able to see it more clearly. Thinking of God in this way, I can't help but see science explain God time and time again. Some can't see it because it's just too far removed from the terminology that they're comfortable with. And others are just happy looking at it without assigning anything outside of science to the understanding of how this all works. I love to see how both of these ideas form together as one. It just shows me how we are all really on the same page. In a previous episode, I said love is the movement of God. What if we looked at God as potential energy, which in science is quite literally the amount of energy an object could potentially acquire? Then if we look at everything else, or God's creation, as kinetic energy. In physics, the kinetic energy of an object is the energy it possesses due to its motion. It is the work needed to accelerate a body of a given mass from rest to its stated velocity. And if we look at velocity as the breath of God, or intention, that moves spirit from static to kinetic energy. For me, this is the Big Bang, or the creation theory, where one mass of energy expanded out. It transferred energy, or it just simply moved. And in movement, we have the concept of distance, or space and time. We hear a lot about God's will, and I have spent so much of my time studying over the idea of what it is. For me, as I begin to wrap right-minded words around it, more and more things begin to fall into place for me. And I just want to share these words with you. Take only what resonates as truth for you. God's work, the creation plan, is an interconnected, complex system, a collection of objects that somehow interrelate with each other to function as a whole and produce some effect no single object within the system could do on its own. This definition I borrowed from a blogger, William Graham. This article he wrote is fantastic. He goes on in this article to talk about systems, and he defined the systems as this. Systems are conduits of energy, vehicles for energy flow and consumption. So every individual system contributes to the group collective behavior through transporting and transforming energy, or love. A quote from Henry Nouwen says this beautifully. A mosaic consists of thousands of little stones. Some are blue, some are green, some are yellow, some are gold. When we bring our faces close to the mosaic, we can admire the beauty of each stone. But as we step back from it, we can see that all of these stones reveal to us a beautiful picture, telling a story none of these stones can tell by itself. So God's will, or the creation code, equation, or plan, is programmed within everything, similar to genetic coding. The creation code, or God's will, establishes and defines boundaries set into place to make consistent or constant and protect everything. These boundaries or laws are the blueprint for spirit extending itself. This blueprint allows for these complex interconnected systems to self-maintain. This leads us to God's plan, the creation plan, an established complex collective behavior or rules that guide our decisions, methods, systems in a way that benefit the welfare of the whole, or the sonship, and respects the right of all affected by its operations. A collective decision made in advance to bring into existence a conduit or vehicle designed with intention for achieving something. So creating isn't just about making something. It's about making something that continues to evolve and create on its own. A classic, like the Mona Lisa, War and Peace, or Moby Dick, these are artistic creations that have taken on a life of their own outside of their creator. They inspire us, they push us, we feel a real connection to our truth and each other through them. This is what God, the ultimate creator, has done. It is what drives the creator in all of us, to look at our creations and feel the spark of life within us, release into an expression unique to our own interpretation of love. We are vectors. We are an extension of God, having direction as well as magnitude. We determine a space to show the relationship of another, and together we form something. Paragraph 7, the remedy for conflict. First, we have to get to the root of the conflict. This is easy, though, because we know that the root of any conflict is always fear. But it's important that we take a minute and really let that sink in, because this means that we have to see the conflict that we're having as a result of fear thinking. Then find our truth around that initial fear causing the conflict. Once we do, then the second corrective steps will fall into place with a series of pulling truths forward and accepting them as our truth. All of this leading us to accepting the atonement as the remedy. These steps are, one, we've already talked about, is to know first that conflict is an expression of fear. Two, fear arises from lack of love. Three, the only remedy for lack of love is perfect love. And four, perfect love is the atonement. Paragraph 8, accepting the remedy. This is what the atonement was made for, to shake us loose from the years of feeling unworthy and not loving ourselves, because fear has us feeling pretty down on ourselves, and guilt isn't helping matters either. So being in a mindset of fear for so long, we've really learned to come down hard on ourselves and others. And these old habits, old thought patterns, can be hard to get rid of. Just knowing what the atonement is or does, or knowing that we need it, isn't enough. We still get stuck because we become so fixated on just the idea of needing it, so we never get to that place of actually accepting it. And the Course tells us this so that we can recognize if this is where we are or not. And if so, consider this a push from needing to accepting the atonement, renewing our worth, and remembering our truth. Once we do, we are truly healed. Paragraph 9, the power of our choice. We all feel the effects of fear, but what we don't realize is that it wouldn't take much for us to understand how we could avoid it. It's rare for us to accept the real power of our minds, and those of us who have on some level can't even accept it all of the time. So we fear the truth of the power of our minds. The fact that this entire illusion was created by our minds scares us. Thought and belief, when combined, have enough power to move mountains, make mountains, literally. This scares us, so we choose to believe and think the mind is powerless, taking the power from the mind and giving it over to the fear. To avoid feeling the fear, we have to understand this. The mind is very powerful. It just is, so fear not and accept the awesomeness of it. The mind never loses its creative force. It never sleeps. Not a second goes by when it isn't creating. To sum this up, I'll end with this. There isn't a thought our minds could think without purpose or effect. Every thought we have is building something all of the time. The power is in our choice. We choose not only what to build, but we choose the trail of intention it carries with it. We can choose love or fear. That wraps up this episode. The thoughts I share in each podcast are my best interpretation of what resonated as truth for me. I love sharing them with you, but my intention is to evoke your own thoughts that will make rise within your awareness your own truth. Thank you for being a part of my journey and for allowing me to be a part of yours. With your coffee still warm and your notes fresh, take some time to go inward. Align yourself daily with your truth and take it with you into every experience. Until next time, keep shining.